Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain.
Including in Tuca, trying to smash it into one
and
word.
And inform you in the afternoon.
Tuca puked on his pad.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Ground ball to first, knocked down by Moreland. They go back to the bag to get the out. Now down to second, requiring a tag. That's a double play. And the Red Sox win the ball game, despite the rain, by a final score of 5-3.
All right, Sox do win again, but I got to tell you, Kemosabe, Tonto. I don't know if I can watch a baseball game where one team is 42 and a half games on top of the other.
The Orioles are going to set a record for how far behind they finish.
The Red Sox are 42 and a half games, and it's the middle of July.
Yep.
So that's a tough watch. I'm sorry. So I missed most of what we are going to discuss in live real time, but we've caught up on all of it. And there were a few interesting developments as it related to the Red Sox and the Yankees last night. As the Yankees are now 6 out. And I want, you know, as I said, going to the top of the hour, is the division over 2 now?
Well, look, it's getting close. It's 4 in the loss column. You got a head-to-head series coming up here in a week. And so the Yankees are going to have to win that series. I mean, and that one's in Boston. That's a 4-gamer, I think. So, like, you know, the Yankees are going to need to come in and make up some ground in that series. Because 6 back, that thing creeps up a little more, it's over. I mean, the Red Sox aren't going to lose that much ground.
Red Sox are too good. There's too many bad teams. It's not... They're not going to blow that.
No, and look, the difference, without question, is being made against teams like Baltimore and Tampa Bay. The Red Sox combined against those teams are 19-5. The Yankees are 10-10. Okay, it's a 7-game difference, and they're 6 apart in the standings. So there you go. Like that alone has made the difference. And so the Red Sox are taking care of business against bad teams, and the Yankees aren't. And then on top of it, like, to me, last night, you say it was especially hard watch because of the opponent. Factor in the rain delays and everything else. It was 5-0 going into the 8th inning.
It was tough. All right, so there are a couple base running plays, Red Sox and Yankees, that caught your eye.
Okay, so let's start with the Red Sox, okay? And this happened in the 8th inning, which at the time didn't seem like... actually, I take it back. This happened in the 9th inning. Devers had made a fielding misplay in the 8th inning. And then in the 9th, after that led to a 2-run home run by Baltimore. So now you've got a game. The Red Sox have the bases loaded with nobody out, and then there was an out recorded. So they had the bases loaded with one out, and Mookie Betts was at the plate, and this happened.
Trying to keep it away from Betts, the 2-2. Floater to center field, charging on Jones. He'll make the catch. Tagging up Brock Holt. He's going to be in to score if he gets in there. Made the catch and the out there at second base. The run did not score on the double play. And so it remains a 5-2 game here in the middle of the 5th inning with Kimbrel coming on.
I don't know what Rafael Devers was thinking about on that fly ball to the outfield, because, you know, one thing you're supposed to do when you're at second base is check where the outfielders are playing. And Andrew Jones... Now, Adam Jones was not playing very deep at all. And you can see right here, Devers just taking off the third base, and he gets doubled up easy. Now, Brock Holt tags up. He's not running hot. He didn't expect, you know, that to happen at second base. And even if he was running hot, they still had the double play before he would have reached the plate.
Yeah, he was turning around, looking behind him like, what happened there?
Right. What happened there is exactly right. Devers completely had his head up his ass. I mean, really, way up there. He took off at the crack of the bat. He just forgot how many outs there were. And it cost the Red Sox a chance to extend the lead. And Cora was asked about this after the game. Okay, and to his credit, Alex Cora pretty much answered the question head on.
Bad read. We'll address that. I mean, where we at and where we going, we can't play that way. It's not only the base running mistake, but we have to bring Craig in that situation. And those things, he doesn't have to manage the team, but he needs to understand that, you know, we have to play better baseball.
Good job.
I mean, Cora goes right at him.
Yeah, well, you just wasted how many pitches from Kimbrel that you wouldn't need to have wasted if they had scored that run.
Yes, and then on top of it, he also made a misplay at the beginning of the 8th that led to a base runner. It became a save situation. They had to get a couple of relievers up. Like, the ripple effect of that was considerable. Devers made 2 significant mistakes at the end of that game. Now, you contrast it with the Yankee game last night.
But Cora called him out on it.
He did. He totally did.
Love it.
He went right to him. He said, bad read. where we're trying to go, can't have it. Right? We'll talk to him about it, but that's not good baseball. Nailed it right at him. Right? No excuses, no nothing.
Save the play-by-play on Sanchez. Just explain what happened.
Okay, so last night in the Yankees game, runner on second base in the first inning for Tampa Bay. Severino and Sanchez get crossed up. It results in a wild pitch. The ball hits Sanchez's foot and goes up the third baseline. The runner advances from second to third. Sanchez then loafs to go get the ball. The runner sprints home. By the time Sanchez recovers, too late. The throw hits the runner. Tampa Bay steals a run. Guy scored from second base on a wild pitch. Then in the ninth inning, the Yankees had the bases loaded, two outs by the time Sanchez came up. They actually had the bases loaded earlier in the inning. Sanchez comes up as the final out of the game, hits a ground ball to second base. He loafs out of the box. He thinks that the Rays are going to make a force out at second base. But Aaron Hicks, who's busting his ass from first to second, beats the feed to second base. So now all of a sudden the Rays don't have the easy out. But because Sanchez loafed out of the batter's box, they still threw to first and got him out.
They turned a 4-6-3 or 4-6-3, either a 6-4-3 or 4-6-3.
I think it was 4-6-3.
It was a 4-6-3 force out. It wasn't a double play because the runner was safe at second. But Sanchez was so slow out of the box, they still turned it, and he was out by two full strides.
I mean, he wasn't even close. He did. He dogged it down the line. Complete. So he dogged it in the first inning. He dogged it in the ninth. He cost him probably two runs on those plays. They lost by one. They're now six behind. And here's what Aaron Boone said after the game.
I'd have to watch it back. But, yeah, he's got to find that his gait quickly, and he should be able to do that now. But I, without having seen, I was watching the play, and I haven't watched the replay yet.
Is that something you will look for, and if you don't like what you see, you have a conversation with him?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we always address stuff with our players, but I want him running at that smooth clip I've talked to you guys about, you know, so, and part of that is getting out of the box.
Sanchez also didn't run hard on that pass ball initially. Is it an issue? Is he hurt, or is he just afraid to run hard? What do you think?
Well, no, he should be able to get after it. He's here and back and should be fine getting after things. That's another thing I got to look at, because when the ball skipped away, I was watching Bowers running from second, knowing that he might be a little aggressive coming around. So I was kind of yelling for, you know, Seve to get in cover home, and I was watching the runner. So it's another play I got to be able to watch back.
I mean, he's just wussy-footing it is what he's doing. He's wussy-footing. Well, you know, honestly, guys, I didn't have my eyes on the play. You know, I was watching the play at second base, so I didn't see him get out of the box. And on the other one, you know, I was watching yelling at Severino to cover the plate, so I got to go back and look at it. You liar. You liar. Like, and it is, it's an interesting contrast between the two. Like, and to me, this reflects well on Cora. Cora's got a secure enough and confident enough relationship with his player where he says, no, I talked to Debbie about it. No good. We got to be on top of it. I mean, we're not just in it to beat the Tampa Bay Rays, Baltimore Orioles, rather, 5-3 on a Tuesday night in July. We got to be better than that. Meanwhile, this guy's saying, I want him to find his gait. I want him to run at his smooth speed, but I didn't get a great look at the play. Oh, God, please. What a lie. That is a complete lie covering for the player. And now, there were rumors out there today, and again, I saw this quickly, but John Heyman's reporting that Sanchez may have injured himself again last night, which is another lie. Now they're trying to cover for the guy. Sanchez is a dog. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I mean, Boone just had every chance he was asked directly if he was still hobbled or still not right, and Boone said, no, he's here. So he had every chance to blame the injury last night. Sanchez was asked about it last night. He had every chance to blame the injury. He didn't. Now all of a sudden he's injured? Oh, my arm, it's broken. Like, so now all of a sudden to cover for the guy, they're saying that he's actually dinged up.
Oh, no, they're lying. They're totally lying. Sanchez is a dog. He's hitting .181 this year. Joe Girardi was all over him last year for his defense and for his laziness. They were all over him for it. Now Boone has come in and Sanchez has gotten worse, not better. Oh, there's a surprise. A guy who's a disciplinarian was actually getting more out of the player than this guy who's these up on him. Sanchez is hitting .181. And he sucks defensively, and he's not trying. I sound like I'm offended by it.
You are.
I'm a little offended.
Well, you got a lot tied to that team there, Anthony.
Well, look, I just think that the Yankees are, They're puking all over themselves right now. They are. They're six back. They better watch it or they're going to be nine out by the time they come into Boston next week.
Okay, so we've got that at 617-779-0985. And then the trade deadline. Red Sox still striking out. Apparently they struck out on a Miami reliever today as well. We'll give you those details with your thoughts to your phones right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Bass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Bass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
Sanchez hits one to short. Second baseman flips to the shortstop, Adames. He's safe to throw the first. It's in time. And the ball game is over. Sanchez hit a rocket that the second baseman Robertson fielded. Flipped to Adames for the force. That was not in time. But a heads-up Adames threw on the first base and got the out. And the Rays hang on and win by a score of 7-6.
A disappointing loss for the New York Yankees. Plenty of opportunities. And you're right, Kenny. Gary Sanchez hits this ball hard. Robertson goes to Adames at second. He's not going to be able to make the play, but his head's up enough to continue the play to first base as Sanchez getting down the line. Obviously doesn't run well, and they get him by plenty.
Let's take a look at Sanchez who hit that ground ball.
He wasn't busting out of the box. Tries to pick it up at the end. That's just inexcusable right there.
Yeah.
That cannot happen.
Finally, the Yankees broadcasters woke up there. Oh, it took O'Brien in that Devers cut and both these guys here. That wasn't Michael Kay, right?
No, Kay didn't do the game last night. So what happened is that they didn't see it until the replay. Like, because again, like most people, they follow the ball and then they're like, boy, Sanchez is slow down the line. And then the replay comes and they see the replay and he didn't hustle out of the box. And so they just didn't mention it entirely on the radio broadcast.
So the first year manager thing, you know, Cora feels like, you know, he's got a grip on if Devers has a, questionable focus or effort there at the end of the game. He addresses it, takes it head on. Aaron Boone sounds like a lost little schoolboy. And there's that first-year manager thing coming back.
I mean, but Cora, you know, again, to me, Cora hits it, like you said, head on. Head on.
Not just about the base running error and not just about that, but about what it cost the Kimbrel, what it cost the bullpen, what it cost the arms and the pitches thrown because of that. Like, he gave you the whole impact of it.
I mean, I feel like Cora's on it. I mean, he's on it. You know, he's saying, no. You know, there was a mistake there. He doesn't gloss over it. Like, can you imagine what John Farrell would have said there?
Oh, brother.
Like, it would have just been, you know, one big pile of meaningless words after another. That's all. And to me, Boone, like, wrong way to handle it.
The legs had a lack of churning out of the box.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It would have been some sort of crap like that. That's exactly right. It would have been some sort of garbage like that.
All right, real quick, before we go back to your phones, it's 617-779-0985. Trade deadline situation. So, obviously, Machado, gone. Familia, gone. Was there one more that they were in on?
Kelvin Herrera got traded. They didn't get him. Brad Hand got traded. They didn't get him.
Brad Hand is the big one I was talking about.
Okay, so now three premium relievers have moved here.
Familia, Hand, and...
basically all within the last month. And the Red Sox haven't gotten any of them. And the one over the weekend, Jurys Familia, from the Mets to the Oakland A's, Oakland gave up virtually nothing. They gave up a couple of fringe prospects at best, and they gave up some international signing money, $1 million in bonus money, that the Mets can now add to their allotment and go out and sign international free agents. Okay, so that was the real get for the Mets in addition to moving Familia's salary.
And the Red Sox could have matched that.
Yes. Yep, they could have. The only thing I don't know if they could have matched is the international signing money. A, I don't know how much they have left. And B, when you draft the way they have, this is the only other way you can get young talent. You need that international money to go out and get young talent. So I just feel like they're whiffing across the board. Now, there are still guys out there, including a guy in Baltimore that may pitch in this series in Zach Britton. Britton's a good fit for them because he's left-handed. They could use a hard-throwing lefty. He'd be a good fit for him in a lot of ways. My understanding is that the Red Sox and Orioles were supposed to talk again today. I don't know if that means in person. I don't know if that means over the phone. Dombrowski staying in his hotel room and Duquette staying wherever. I don't know. And I don't even know whether that would consummate a deal. But what I do know is if I'm the Red Sox and I'm coming home, boy, I'd love to have Zach Britton on that plane with me. I just don't know that they have what it takes. So again, it gets complicated. Britton's got, you know, I got to check the salary, but he's got a little bit of money. I think the Red Sox can take it on, but do they have the prospects to get him?
To me, the bigger issue, I mean, assuming, why would they even bother talking to Baltimore if they can't assume the salary?
Well, unless Baltimore picks up some of it.
Okay. The bigger thing is, though, if there are six or seven teams after Zach Britton, how are you going to beat out these other teams when no one wants what you got? And there's another team, the Marlins, with a setup guy that I wasn't even familiar with. What's his name?
Me neither. Murray, who's the guy? I don't know any of the Marlins players.
Oh, so, yeah. So the name again is...
Whatever. Some setup guy in Miami. John Morosi says that the Marlins are not interested, or that Michael Chavis or Groom are not enough. Are not enough for a setup guy.
Drew Steckenrider.
Yeah, and look, Groom is injured, so I'm not sure they could even trade him right now anyway. He'd have to be a player to be named or something. And then beyond that, but Chavis is back. He's playing, and my understanding was the same, like the idea that there was a report over the weekend or at the end of the week that the Orioles were scouting Chavis. And so everyone starts saying, oh, well, you know, maybe they can use him to get Britton. He's not enough. And that's on me saying that. I checked it out.
Yeah, I mean, if he's not enough for Steckenrider or whatever, how's he going to be enough for Zach Britton?
He's not. He's not enough. Chavis alone is not enough. They got to give up something real. They're in trouble there. I mean, they don't have a ton to deal. And again, this comes back to Dombrowski. It's a big time for him. Maybe he'll pull a rabbit out of a hat. I hope he does.
Okay, it's debatable how marketable you want Devers to be. But just back to the Devers thing. He's screwing up on the base pass. Does he lead Major League Baseball in errors?
Oh, he probably does. I don't even know that. I'll check.
I think he was at one time here recently, but...
He does with 20.
Okay, so Devers leads the league in errors. He's a mess on the base pass like everybody else, and I think he's hitting 150 this month. He's hitting 230-something on the season. I think he's hitting 150 or 180, something like that, this month. I'm not even sure if that's tradable, but does it impact how you view him? I mean, if you have nothing in the system, but you can get someone to bite on Devers, is that someone you entertain?
It depends what you could get back.
Zach Britton.
No, not enough, because he's a rental. But if you could get yourself like a legit, like let's
the
say...
Hand.
Yeah, Brad Hand.
Yep.
I mean, I think you'd have to think about it. Do I think they're going to do it? No. But to me, if you could get a good return on Devers, you'd have to think about it.
Okay, that and Jackie Bradley, who's hit over 300 for this past month and is hitting. Here's his 1 month of hitting. So sell high end. I mean, that's what I would do. That to me is where their value's coming from. Again, I don't know. Bradley's got 2 years of team control left, or one plus one. It's not much left anymore. So I don't know exactly what sort of value he'd have. But I think that's where, I don't know. I think that's what you got to look at, because no one wants anything in your system.
See, I'd be surprised if they did that. I just think it's like a sort of a default thing. You don't mess with the team you got on the field. You add to it. And I just don't know if they have anything to get.
Okay. As I said, 617-779-0985. Back to your phones and back to the Jimmy Garoppolo stuff. Hi, Dave in New Hampshire. What do you got?
Oh, yeah.
Hello, David. Okay, we're taking phones now, so if you're on hold, be ready to go. Eric in Marlboro. Hi, Eric.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
It's going good.
Just a quick point. I'm actually really pissed at Belichick, and I'll just tell you why. I find him to be incredibly hypocritical over the last two seasons. Now, I'll forever be grateful of the championships and what he brought to Boston. That will always be. But I just don't get how a coach says team first, team first, team first, and then makes two just really horrible calls that cost this city a championship. So I am beyond pissed. I think it's time for him maybe to go. I just feel like it's written all over the wall. I would love to see this season start with Belichick out the door and see what Brady and McDaniels can do on their own.
So Kraft should fire him.
I think you've already said it. What he did is already a fireable offense. And I do believe there's a lot of New England Patriot fans, unlike what you kind of propagate, that we just mythologize this guy as a god. There's plenty of us that are like, no, I'm done. I'm tired of it. I've seen championships throughout my 30s and 40s, and I'm grateful. But he's an old curmudgeon now who is so egotistical that he is ruining the future of this franchise. So, yeah, fire him. Get rid of him. Throw him a party. See you later. Thank you. Let's start a new era. That's where I am.
That is strong. Murray, do you even think Belichick should be fired?
No, it's that's a bit much. I mean, I think there's
the
a stain. I think there's a stain on his legacy how this thing is kind of unwrapped here over the last couple of years.
But you want Brady to win the power struggle, right?
Yeah.
Which means Brady's in, Bill's out.
Yeah, but Bill's going to be out by the end of this season anyway. So, I mean, I feel like that's pretty much a formality at this point.
You do?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. He's not going to stick around if Tom's going to continue to be here and they bring McDaniels back. I think this is it.
See, I mean, I look at it, and I don't know if Belichick's really behaving any differently now than he ever has. I just think the quarterback called him out on it. Like, I think it's more public and we're seeing it more, but Belichick's always been a pain in the ass. He's always done it his way, you know, and people can, you know, brush it under the rug all they want by under the guise of what's best for the team. But the fact is, Bill's been on a power trip since the day he set foot here.
The other reason it would never happen, too, and you always allude to it, is that Kraft doesn't want to be labeled with the guy that, you know, ran another guy out of town. It already happened with Parcells. He doesn't want to live with that.
No. Nope. He wants Bill to quit. But why is Bill going to quit if that's 10, 12, $14 million on the table and he can't go work anywhere else? You know, even if he wanted to, he would still be under Patriots control. So why would he, you know, why would he do that? Again, that's why I said, I wonder if there's a little bit of a staring contest there. Teddy in Chicopee. Go ahead, Teddy.
Yes, Mike, I'd like to know the Patriots, what do they got for a quarterback after Brady? Do they have anybody in mind, or are they going to get a established quarterback to take his place?
Teddy, I don't think they have a plan.
Danny Etling, that's not the guy?
I don't think they have a plan. I mean, unless they have a guy in college. It's supposed to be a weak college crop this year, but unless they got someone targeted and they purposely, you know, held off last year because they know they're going to get the guy this year, or there's a, you know, there's that with Kirk Cousins sort of equivalent, there's a young veteran who's going to shake free here in the next year or two, and they know it, and they've got designs on him. I mean, if they have it, I don't see what it is.
Well, the other interesting subplot that I'm hoping for this season is that Lamar Jackson actually pops, because he's apparently looked good so far in OTAs and whatnot, and they're kind of doing a two-quarterback system right now in Baltimore between him and Flacco. But if he has a good season, well, that's another one, too, that you can always look back at with some regret, because they had a shot at drafting him.
What happened with Kirk Cousins is exceedingly rare. Franchise quarterbacks are not available. They're just not. They, you know, they'll from time to time get into contract beefs, or from time to time they'll take a while for them to get paid by their team. Aaron Rodgers is in that spot right now. Brady's gone through it once or twice. Like, that happens. Those guys don't come free. Kirk, and I'm not, you know, Kirk Cousins is a borderline, you know, franchise guy. I think he is at the end of the day, but, you know, borderline. I mean, that's about as good as you can do on the free agent market.
Well, look, he's a legitimate starting NFL quarterback.
Exactly.
Right, you can agree on that.
Why do I blank again on the kid that went from Minnesota to Denver? Why do I keep forgetting his name?
Case Keenum?
Case Keenum. Is he a legit starting NFL quarterback?
No.
Borderline, like on a bad team, right?
No, he's not. No, Cousins is, though. Cousins.
You don't remember his name, Mike. How could he be a starter?
I barely remember your name. You. What's your name again? I don't remember anyone's name. So I'm a bad judge. But Case Keenum is like as good as you can hope for. Kirk Cousins, that's as good as you can hope for. So that's all a long way of me is saying. If the Patriots have some designs on a current NFL quarterback, man, you better have something really special up your sleeve, because the really good guys are never available.
Well, I don't know. The San Francisco 49ers got
Here's Murray's update. We're right back. Don't go anywhere.
Felger and Maz. Felger and Maz.
Oh.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
A couple things that I know about this story that that I can share here. First, Tom Brady was letting some people know that he thought Josh might not leave over that Super Bowl weekend. So whether or not he communicated that to Kraft, I don't know. I just know that he had some sense of confidence that they were going to be able to hold on to Josh. The other thing I know is that on that Tuesday, I believe it was, right, when, you know, they met with Josh and everything else, that was almost 100% Kraft. Like, that was almost 100% Robert as far as keeping Josh. And I think part of the motivation there was, you know, he looked out after they lost the Super Bowl. He sees a coach is going to be 66, a quarterback is going to be 41, and says to himself, well, what do I have? Are we going to go to being a year-to-year operation now? And I think bringing Josh back, even without the promise that he was going to be the next head coach, at least made them feel like they had a little bit more stability.
And Brady's rolling the whole thing. Again, Karen Garigian over the weekend says that Tom Brady definitely had a hand in bringing Josh McDaniels back. So it's just sort of like Belichick getting squeezed, you know, sort of being squeezed out on an island. And you wonder why a guy like Brett Bielema is on the staff. That's just another confidant of Bill. Boy, but Bill does surround himself. He does gravitate towards these slime balls. I'm sorry. Mike Lombardi, like, give me a break, that guy. And Brent Bielema.
Shiano was another one, too.
Oh, my God.
Like, and he's gone now. He went back to Ohio State. I looked that up earlier.
So one sketch after the next. Like, but Bill's got to have his guys. Because if Tom's calling the shots now, and Tom gets to pick the coaches. Bill's got to have his people. He's got to have his Bobos.
Or it's like, well, if Tom has a buffer and Josh McDaniels, well, I got to have a buffer too.
Exactly.
Brett Bielema.
Exactly.
I just think he probably just needs support. I mean, in his own head, he's got to have someone he can talk to that he can trust, because he's probably getting to the point where he doesn't know who he can trust anymore.
Oh, because he's losing people, the most important players like Brady, Gronk, and Edelman. Well, look in the mirror. Who did that?
Oh, listen. Yeah, I'm with you, Murray. I'm just telling you that that's what he feels like. I'm not telling you he didn't deserve it. He created his own environment.
Okay, to the phones. As promised, Michael in Medford. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, I'm against the other caller. I blame Kraft and not Belichick on the Jimmy G return, because Kraft should have handled the total transaction if he's going to undercut the coach from start to finish. That I agree with, because you make sure you take Belichick completely out of the equation. And if you're going to play GM instead of owner, then you do the right thing. Kraft should have expected something to go wrong cutting Belichick's guy, that's for sure. If Jimmy G stayed and Brady traded, I believe that would have been a good move, and I believe some of the traded players would still be here.
So that second piece I don't quite get, but I do understand the first thing that he said about if Kraft's going to, you know, sort of impose himself and go all the way and take over.
Makes sense.
Right? That's just that, because Kraft sort of left himself open where he pretty much forces Bill's hand, and, you know, Bill's heart isn't in it. And Bill doesn't agree with it, yet he has to go forward and execute it. And so would Robert have just been better off saying, Bill, I got this one. Just worry about the game plan. I'm going to take, you know, like, and that's insane to think about.
Okay, but now that said, how would you feel about that?
Horrible. But I feel horrible as it is that the owner imposed himself on this one, you know? So, you know, all the way around.
I mean, in this case, when you really think about it, it shouldn't have been, Kraft should have been able to do it. In other words, Cleveland was knocking at your door. There were teams lining up. It shouldn't have been a hard guy to trade, is my point.
You're right. And I'm just saying, I wouldn't want Robert doing that because he doesn't know the league. He doesn't know. But
in this case, it shouldn't matter.
A trained circus clown knows that a first-round pick is more valuable than a second-round pick. I don't need Amos Alonzo Kraft with the stop whistle. Like, that's not really a football decision. That's what's more valuable? A first-round pick from Cleveland or a second-round pick from San Francisco?
Yeah, and my point is that they wouldn't have even had to, like, you know, there would have been no brainstorming about what's he really worth, and there were teams willing to pay for this guy. This should have been an easy trade.
Okay, Craig in the car. Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on one second. Kurt, I hit the wrong one. Craig in the car on a Red Sox thought. Go ahead, Craig.
Hello?
Hi, Craig. You're on the air.
Hey, why do you guys think we shouldn't trade Devers for Britton? If we have Britton and Kimbrel in the bullpen for the playoffs, we can win the World Series. And we're not going to lose anything if you got Nunez or Holt at third base.
So the answer is that Britton only has 3 months left on his contract, and then he's a free agent. So you could lose him for nothing after the year. But that's why. I mean, that's why. I mean, that's why, you know, when we said before, the hand reliever in San Diego, that's one I would consider for Devers. You get him for 3 years.
I mean, you need to get more than a couple of months out of a guy, particularly a reliever who's coming off an injury. Let's not leave that part of it out of there either. I mean, he's had trouble with command since he's been back. He's walked guys. So you're going to give up a guy for a third baseman that could hit 30 home runs for 5 years?
I'm just curious,
a reliever for 2 months?
I'm just curious about Devers' stock, how you feel about him internally. He hasn't hit in a month. He's coming off a DL stint. He has the most errors in Major League Baseball. He's making idiotic base running moves like he is last night. He does have, he's got decent power numbers, right? Hasn't he hit a fair amount of bombs?
I want to say he's got, like, what, 14 homers?
I was going to say 15.
I'll check it out.
Okay, so he's, you know, not quite 30 home run pace, but sort of, but either way, I'm just saying. Do you still feel this guy's a key part of the core, the future on this team?
I mean, from that standpoint, I think they got to take the chance. And when I say that, I mean, if you're asking me, is he a key part over who? They have no other young players. Now, I look back on it and say, you for Devers, if you wanted, you probably could have gotten Machado. If you really wanted to put a deal together, you could have gotten Machado and Britton. Like, you know, sprinkle some other pieces around Devers, and now you're talking. But just for Britton, straight up? No. Can't do it. So you're giving up too much. No.
Dave is calling us from Atkinson, New Hampshire. Go ahead, David. Okay, David is not. He's no longer on the line. Jim in Beverly has a Red Sox thought for us. Hi, Jim.
Hey, guys. Hey, Maz, before I get to my Sox thought, I didn't catch your opinion on your Golden Boy Date Me A-App piece. Porn star.
I told you, Jim, I said the other day, he should be able to do better.
Okay, yeah, no, I agree. Matt, even if we can't get one of these top-end bullpen arms, don't we have to get somebody? Because this bullpen sucks. I mean, every time they bring Joe Kelly in, I have to reach for the freaking Crown Royal.
So I'm surprised, like, who are they going to convert? They have to trade for a guy and convert one of their current guys. They need two guys out there.
Yep.
And between Price, Pomerantz, and Eddie Rodriguez, one of those guys has got to go.
I think so, too.
So they've stretched Pomerantz out as a starter. He's coming back as a starter tonight. Like, why not bring him back in the relief role and start that?
I mean, he might end up there anyway. Like, you know, you can start him now and relieve him later. Go in the other way is harder.
But, I mean, start treating him now as you would when you get towards the end of the year in the playoffs. Is that, you know, special weapon, the secret weapon out there.
I mean, maybe you'll see it in September. Just play the game. Let him think he's a starter for now. And so I just, honestly, the reason I think it should be Price, if you're going to bring a lefty out of the bullpen in the seventh inning of a playoff game, who do you want it to be?
To me, I mean, it's Price, but I'd rather have, but okay.
So I hear what you're like.
Yeah, no, Price. But Price is the answer, but Price is also the answer if you ask me, who do I want to get the ball on day two?
Right. So the bottom line is Price is the best pitcher out of the three.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so I would rather have him coming out of the bullpen. I'll take my chances there.
Well, I think I feel like there's less of a pants crapping going on in the bullpen because I just don't think he has enough time to think about it.
Exactly.
And he's got 5 days to think about his next start where, you know, in game is in game. And I don't think he crawls as deeply inside of his own head.
I totally agree, which is why ultimately I say, you know what? He's more of a known commodity in the bullpen in October than he is anywhere else. I'll take that.
We continue with your thoughts on some of these Red Sox items. Rafi Devers after another base running error last night and a really poor month offensively. What are your thoughts on him in terms of trade bait? We have more Garoppolo stuff, delicious Garoppolo stuff with the Patriots drama. I want to get to something over the weekend. I was off yesterday. I didn't have a second to weigh in on the golf. I want to just spend 30 seconds on that. We'll do that next with your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
You get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
A little ticked off at myself, for sure. I had a chance starting that back nine to do something, and I didn't do it. I thought today, starting at the day, saw that Jason played a beautiful round early. Brooksy played another solid round today, and I thought nine would be the number. You know, there's three guys at nine. I figured one of the three guys would shoot even par. I know it's tough out there, but I figured I needed to go get that number somehow. You know, next thing, lo and behold, I'm tied for lead, and then I'm leading. Unfortunately, I hit a bad 3-iron off the tee there at 10. Grass grabbed my shaft again and hit it left, and I made a couple mistakes there on the green. Same thing at 12. The grass grabbed the shaft. This time I turned it open and made bogey there.
Hi, it's Felger and Mass. Felger back in the A-hole chair. I was off yesterday, so I didn't get to do a typical re-entry Monday thing. I would have given you 30 seconds. Maz did it. Maz got to talk about it yesterday. But I would have weighed in with about 30 to 60 seconds of golf because, I thought the weekend was a big weekend for golf.
It was a good weekend.
And the ratings are in. Highest British Open rating in 18 years. 38% higher than last year when Jordan Spieth won. And this says to me two things. It says one thing. It says one thing. Golf needs Tiger. Golf needs superstars. And Jordan Spieth isn't it. So really that's two different things. Golf does not need Tiger, but golf needs superstars. And Jordan Spieth isn't it. No one is. No one is. This milquetoast, lily white, boring field has no interesting characters in it. And because Jordan Spieth should be the guy. Superstar, greatest talent in the game, number one golfer, American, all those things. 38% lower last year than this year when Jordan Spieth won. What does that tell you? Jordan Spieth does not move the needle, just like Dustin Johnson doesn't, just like Zach Johnson doesn't, just like you name it. No one moves the needle in that sport. Unless they're just that sort of half older generation. Mickelson, Garcia when he won the Masters the year before last, Tiger Woods. The current golfing field, for all their brilliance and talent, does not move the needle. And boy, was that obvious over the weekend. When Tiger's contending there and then takes a lead, that's an event.
So when you said the highest British in 18 years.
Since Tiger won it the last time.
At St. Andrews. Well, actually.
Or not the last time he won it. But
his first one at St. Andrews.
When Tiger won 18 years ago. This is the highest since then. So it's just, this is what the sport lacks. Compelling characters. And Zach Johnson should be, with his, you know, history of drug abuse and the wife and
Dustin
the whole
Johnson,
thing. Dustin
mean.
Johnson. Sorry, sorry. Dustin Johnson. And he's just a physical freak. Like, that should be a guy. Nope. Nope. People do not care about Dustin Johnson. They don't care about anyone on the field. They don't care. And boy, and that is, again, just the biggest difference between golf now and golf when I was a kid. It was all personalities when I were a kid, and they were identifiable. And boy, and I've felt that way forever. I've had this rant forever. And when I see a weekend like this weekend and Sunday with Tiger, it's just, people will watch golf. You've got to have compelling characters doing the golfing, though. It can't just be one country club, brat after the next with the exact same swing and a baseball hat on. They all look the same and swing the same. It's all the same. There's nothing there. Tiger goes out there and he's different. And now Tiger has this backstory of failure and hitting bottom and rising back up. And boy, do we love those stories. A true comeback story.
Oh, yeah. Addiction to painkillers, porn stars. It's like all kinds of stuff.
The whole nine. He's hit rock, but, you know, he ran over the fire hydrant 10 years ago, hasn't won since. And, you know, if and when he comes back and win, because he's going to win at least one more. And I'll tell you right now, it's either going to be Augusta or it's going to be Britain.
One of those two. That's it.
That's it. It's where old guys win. He's going to have no shot at one of those U.S. Open courses, which are impossible. And, you know, I don't know how you win in your 40s. PGA, maybe. I don't know. Depends on the course. But Augusta or Britain, I think he's going to win one of those. And when he does, it's going to be a big, big deal. It was almost a very, very big deal on Sunday.
I mean, those ratings, and we touched on this yesterday, they peaked at the end of Tiger's round. That's when the ratings peaked. You know, he's still a shot or two off the lead going into 16. And in that last half hour is when they peaked. It was him. It was totally him. He gagged.
No one wants to watch anybody else. Hey, golf. Hey, Hardy. Love you. Mean it. No one gives a crap about the people who golf. No one cares. No one cares about Spieth.
But I think it's better for golf if he stays close, but actually never wins that last major that has been eluding him now for a decade. I feel that way. Look, once he gets it, what the hell's the tune-in factor? To see if he can do it again?
Yes.
If he gets... No, this happened with the Cubs winning the World Series.
It's different. The Cubs have never won one. Tiger's won 14.
It would have been better for baseball if the Cubs never won one. It's better for golf right now if Tiger contends like he did this past weekend and just can't get over that hump.
So you know what really the best story is? Is that he wins three or four more and then can break Jack. Like, then all of a sudden you'd
now it's game on.
Yeah, now here you go.
He's four short, so if he wins two or three, and now he's right knocking at the door. Now you go back to rooting against him, but for the first time in my life, I'm actually pulling for him.
See, that's how I felt. When he got to the 11th tee and he had the lead, I went, oh, man.
Oh, this is good. It's like, oh, boy, does the sport need it. Oh.
When he first came on, like late 90s, early aughts, you weren't into him?
Nope. Because I'm an underdog guy. I always root against that guy. And so, never mind the waitress banging, this cretin that Tiger Woods turned out to be. I just didn't like the guy that wins every Sunday. You know, I always root against that guy. But at least, he was there to root against. So whether you were pro-Tiger or anti-Tiger, there was a reason there to watch on Sunday to see him win again or, someone come and nip him. And so I was always rooting for him to get nipped until it's the first time ever I wanted him to win. First time ever. Because it needed it so bad. It changed the day. It became an event. It became that was, boy, did golf miss that. Does it miss it?
I thought it was great. I mean, and again, you look up at one point and not only was Tiger in the lead, but you had a good sort of cross section there. McIlroy was on the leaderboard.
Oh, it was a good leaderboard.
Spieth was on the leaderboard. It was good stuff.
Good leaderboard.
Like you looked at it and said, in the stories of Spieth, these are the guys who watched Tiger growing up. Like Spieth saying, I'd love to go head to head with him. Spieth crapped his pants absolutely on Sunday. And of course, my guy Francesco Molinari came through. As I said yesterday, Felger. There's the term palline in Italian means little balls. Palline, little balls. And most Italians over the course of their careers, like really, who's the greatest? Mario Andretti?
Alberto Tomba.
Alberto Tomba, right, exactly. I mean, all of them. Palline, little balls. But Francesco, Pauline Grande, big balls. He's got big ones. He got the bigger balls. The whole country is rooting for him. So I was proud of my countrymen personally.
I got you.
But
you think Tiger choked, don't you?
I do. I do think he choked. I think he got to the 11th tee and went, "Oh my God, I'm in the lead." And he, how do you? All you've done is hit fairways the whole tournament.
It's the whole sport is choking. The whole sport's in your own head. So it's all a game of nerves.
Sure, but so, I mean, but he was different.
I mean, to me, by definition, if you give away a lead, it's almost
a given.
Yeah, it's because it's all mental. So you either are clutch or you're choking. Like in that sport, because the talent is all the same. I mean,
but he never used to choke. That's all. I think in this case with the layoff and everything else, he got the lead in a major and he gave it back.
He was trying to explain it there too, right? He still thought he needed birdies, so he was up, and he still was too aggressive, and that's why he went for that stupid chip shot on whatever hole that was, where he cut it too close. And
oh, what a dumb play that was!
And that was it. You know, really, that was it. He only made two or three mistakes there in those two holes, right back to back. But they were born out of the same thing. He was still going for birdies, which was dumb.
I mean, Murray and I said this yesterday, when he hit that ball out of the bunker straight up in the air on the front of the green, I went, he's going to win. He's going to win. When I saw that shot, I went, oh my God, that's ridiculous.
But there is no one else in sports that changes the sport. You know, when he's on and when he's there or when he's not there, it's a whole different thing.
It was fun to have him back.
Okay, so anyway, we're on the same page. There's your golf minute. We're going to reset the Jimmy Garoppolo stuff and get to all your phones after Murray's 90-second update here without any commercials.
Felger and Mass, the Sports Hub.